Hey, sweetie. Hi. Yeah, just got home. How are you? Looks like you've fell asleep on the couch here. Must be tired. Yeah, oh gosh, another tough day. Well, you probably just need some rest. Let's get you into bed. Here, I'll read to you some more. Can finish the keep reading the little prints. Yeah, okay. Pillow feel right? All right. Well, let's pick up where we left off. Let's see. All right. Chapter 7. On the fifth day, again, as always, it was thanks to the sheep, the secret of the little prince's life was revealed to me. Abruptly, without anything to lead up with to it, and as if the question had been born of long and silent meditation on his problem, he demanded, "A sheep, if it eats little bushes, does it eat flowers too?" "A sheep," I answered, "eats anything it finds in its reach." "Even flowers that have thorns?" "Yes, even flowers that have thorns." "Then the thorns, what use are they?" I did not know. At that moment, I was very busy trying to unscrew a bolt that had got stuck in my engine. I was very much worried, for it was becoming clear to me that the breakdown of my plane was extremely serious, and I had so little drinking water left that I had to fear the worst. "The thorns, what use are they?" The little prince never let go of a question once he had asked it. As for me, I was upset over that bolt, and I answered with the first thing that came into my head. "The thorns are of no use at all. Flowers have thorns just for spite." "Oh." There was a moment of complete silence. Then the little prince flashed back at me with a kind of resentfulness. "I don't believe you. Flowers are weak creatures. They are naive. They reassure themselves as best they can. They believe that their thorns are terrible weapons." I did not answer. At that instant, I was saying to myself, "If this bolt still won't turn, I'm going to knock it out with the hammer." Again, the little prince disturbed my thoughts. "And you actually believe that the flowers..." "Oh, no," I cried. "No, no, no. I don't believe anything. I answered you with the first thing that came into my head. Don't you see? I'm very busy with matters of consequence." He stared at me, thunderstruck. "Matters of consequence." He looked at me there, with my hammer in my hand, my fingers black with engine grease, bending down over an object which seemed to him extremely ugly. "You talk just like the grown-ups." That made me a little ashamed. But he went on relentlessly. "You mix everything up together. You confuse everything." He was really very angry. He tossed his golden curls in the breeze. "I know a planet where there is a certain red-faced gentleman. He has never smelled a flower. He has never looked at a star. He has never loved anyone. He has never done anything in his life but add up figures. And all day he says over and over, just like you, 'I am busy with matters of consequence,' and that makes him swell up with pride. But he is not a man, he is a mushroom."
"A what?"
"A mushroom." The little prince was now white with rage. "The flowers have been growing thorns for millions of years. For millions of years the sheep have been eating them just the same. And it is not a matter of consequence to try to understand why the flowers go to so much trouble to grow thorns which are never any use to them? Is the warfare between the sheep and the flowers not important? Is this not of more consequence than a fat, red-faced gentleman's sums? And if I know, I myself, one flower, which is unique in the world, which grows nowhere but on my planet, but which one little sheep can destroy in a single bite one morning without even noticing what he is doing? Oh, you think that is not important? His face turned from white to red as he continued. If someone loves a flower of which just one single blossom grows in all the millions and millions of stars, it is enough to make him happy just to look at the stars. He can say to himself, somewhere, my flower is there. But if the sheep eats the flower, in one moment all his stars will be darkened. And you think that is not important? He could not say anything more. His words were choked by sobbing. The night had fallen. I had let my tools drop from my hands. Of what moment now was my hammer, my bolt, or thirst, or death? On one star, one planet, my planet, the Earth, there was a little prince to be comforted. I took him in my arms and rocked him. I said to him, "The flower that you love is not in danger. I will draw you a muzzle for your sheep. I will draw you a railing to put around your flower. I did not know what to say to him. I felt awkward and blundering. I did not know how I could reach him, where I could overtake him, and go on hand in hand with him once more. It is such a secret place, the land of tears." Chapter 8. I soon learned to know this flower better. On the little prince's planet, the flowers had always been very simple. They had only one ring of petals. They took up no room at all. They were a trouble to nobody. One morning they would appear in the grass, and by night they would have faded peacefully away. But one day, from a seed blown up no one knew where, a new flower had come up, and the little prince had watched very closely over the small sprout, which was not like any other small sprouts on his planet. It might, you see, have been a new kind of baobab. But the shrub soon stopped growing and began to get ready to produce a flower. The little prince, who was present at the first appearance of a huge bud, felt at once that some sort of miraculous apparition must emerge from it. But the flower was not satisfied to complete the preparations for her beauty in the shelter of her green chamber. She chose her colors with the greatest care. She dressed herself slowly. She adjusted her petals one by one. She did not wish to go out in the world all rumpled like the field poppies. It was only in the full radiance of her beauty that she wished to appear. Oh, yes, she was a coquettish creature. And her mysterious adornment lasted for days and days. Then one morning, exactly at sunrise, she suddenly showed herself. And after working with all this painstaking precision, she yawned and said, I'm scarcely awake. I beg that you will excuse me. My petals are still all disarranged. But the little prince could not restrain his admiration. Oh, how beautiful you are. Am I not? The flower responded sweetly. And I was born at the same moment as the sun. The little prince could guess easily enough that she was not any too modest, but how moving and exciting she was. "I think it is time for breakfast," she added an instant later, "if you would have the kindness to think of my needs." And the little prince, completely abashed, went to look for a sprinkling can of fresh water. So he tended the flower. So too, she began very quickly to torment him with her vanity, which was, if the truth be told, a little difficult to deal with. One day, for instance, when she was speaking of her four thorns, she said to the little prince, Let the tigers come with their claws. There are no tigers on my planet, the little prince objected. And anyway, tigers do not eat weeds. I am not a weed, the flower replied sweetly. Oh, please excuse me. I am not at all afraid of tigers, she went on, but I have a horror of drafts. I suppose you wouldn't have a screen for me. A horror of drafts? Well, that is bad luck for a plant, remarked the little prince, and added to himself, this flower is a very complex creature. At night, I want you to put me under a glass globe. It is very cold where you live, in the place I came from. But she interrupted herself at that point. She had come in the form of a seed. She could not have known anything of any other world. Embarrassed over having let herself be caught on the verge of such a naive untruth, she coughed two or three times in order to put the little prince in the wrong. The screen? I was just going to look for it when you spoke to me. Then she forced her cough a little more, so that he should suffer from remorse just the same. So the little prince, in spite of all the goodwill that was inseparable from his love, had soon come to doubt her. He had taken seriously words which were without importance, and it made him very unhappy. I ought not to have listened to her, he confided in me one day. One never ought to listen to the flowers. One should simply look at them and breathe their fragrance. Mine perfumed all my planet, but I did not know how to take pleasure in all her grace. This tale of claws, which disturbed me so much, should only have filled my heart with tenderness and pity. And he continued his confidences. The fact is that I did not know how to understand anything. I ought to have judged by deeds and not by words. She cast her fragrance and her radiance over me. I ought never to have run away from her. I ought to have guessed all the affection that lay behind her poor little stratagems. Flowers are so inconsistent. But I was too young to know how to love her. Chapter 9. I believe that for his escape, he took advantage of the migration of a flock of wild birds. On the morning of his departure, he put his planet in perfect order. He carefully cleaned out his active volcanoes. He possessed two active volcanoes, and they were very convenient for heating his breakfast in the morning. He also had one volcano that was extinct. But as he said, one never knows. So he cleaned out the extinct volcano, too. If they are well cleaned out, volcanoes burn slowly and steadily, without any eruptions. Volcanic eruptions are like fires in a chimney. On our Earth, we are obviously much too small to clean out our volcanoes. That is why they bring no end of trouble upon us. The little prince also pulled up, with a certain sense of dejection, the last little shoots of the baobabs. He believed that he would never want to return. But on this last morning, all these familiar tasks seemed very precious to him. And when he watered the flower for the last time and prepared to place her under the shelter of her glass globe, he realized that he was very close to tears. Goodbye, he said to the flower, but she made no answer. Goodbye, he said again. The flower coughed, but it was not because she had a cold. I've been silly, she said to him at last. Ask your forgiveness. Try to be happy. He was surprised by this absence of reproaches. He stood there all bewildered, the glass globe held arrested in midair. He did not understand this quiet sweetness. Of course I love you, the flower said to him. It is my fault that you have not known it all the while. That is of no importance. But you have been just as foolish as I. Try to be happy. Let the glass globe be. I don't want it anymore. But the wind... My cold is not so bad as all that. The cool night air will do me good. I'm a flower. But the animals... Well, I must endure the presence of 2 or 3 caterpillars if I wish to become acquainted with the butterflies. It seems that they are very beautiful. And if not the butterflies and the caterpillars, who will call upon me? You will be far away. And for the large animals, I am not afraid of any of them. I have my claws. And naively, she showed her 4 thorns. Then she added, "Don't linger like this. You have decided to go away. Now go." For she did not want him to see her crying. She was such a proud flower. Chapter 10. He found himself in the neighborhood of the asteroids 325, 326, 327, 328, 329, and 330. He began, therefore, by visiting them in order to add to his knowledge. The first of them was inhabited by a king. Clad in royal purple and ermine, he was seated upon a throne which was at the same time both simple and majestic. "Ah, here is a subject," exclaimed the king when he saw the little prince coming. And the little prince asked himself, how could he recognize me when he had never seen me before? He did not know how the world is simplified for kings. To them, all men are subjects. "Approach, so that I may see you better," said the king, who felt consumingly proud of being at last a king over somebody. The little prince looked everywhere to find a place to sit down. But the entire planet was crammed and obstructed by the king's magnificent ermine robe. So he remained standing upright, and since he was tired, he yawned. "It is contrary to etiquette to yawn in the presence of a king," the monarch said to him. "I forbid you to do so." "I can't help it, I can't stop myself," replied the little prince, thoroughly embarrassed. "I've come on a long journey, and I've had no sleep." "Ah, then," the king said, "I order you to yawn. It is years since I have seen anyone yawning. Yawns, to me, are objects of curiosity. Come now, yawn again. It is an order." "That frightens me. I cannot anymore," murmured the little prince, now completely abashed. "Hum, hums," replied the king. "Then I order you to sometimes to yawn and sometimes to..." He sputtered a little and seemed vexed. For what the king fundamentally insisted upon was that his authority should be respected. He tolerated no disobedience. He was an absolute monarch. But because he was a very good man, he made his orders reasonable. "If I ordered a general," he would say, by way of example, "if I ordered a general to change himself into a seabird, and if the general did not obey me, that would not be the fault of the general. It would be my fault." "May I sit down?" came now a timid inquiry from the little prince. "I order you to do so," the king answered him, and majestically gathered in a fold of his ermine mantle. But the little prince was wondering. The planet was tiny. Over what could this king really rule? "Sire," he said to him, "I beg that you will excuse my asking you a question." "I order you to ask me a question," the king hastened to assure him. "Sire, over what do you rule?" "Over everything," said the king with a magnificent simplicity. "Over everything?" The king made a gesture which took in his planet, the other planets, and all the stars. "Over all that?" asked the little prince. "Over all that," the king answered. For his rule was not only absolute, it was also universal. "And the stars obey you?" "Certainly they do," the king said. "They obey instantly. I do not permit insubordination." Such power was a thing for the little prince to marvel at. If he had been master of such complete authority, he would have been able to watch the sunset not 44 times in one day, but 72, or even 100, or even 200 times, without ever having to move his chair. And because he felt a bit sad, as he remembered his little planet which he had forsaken, he plucked up his courage to ask the king a favor. "I should like to see a sunset. Do me that kindness. Order the sun to set." "If I ordered a general to fly from one flower to another like a butterfly, or to write a tragic drama, or to change himself into a seabird, and if the general did not carry out the order that he had received, which one of us would be in the wrong?" the king demanded. "The general or myself?" "You," said the little prince firmly. "Exactly. One must require from each one the duty which each one can perform," the king went on. "Accepted authority resists first of all on reason. If you ordered your people to go and throw themselves into the sea, they would rise up in revolution. I have the right to require obedience, because my orders are reasonable." "Then my sunset?" the little prince reminded him, for he never forgot a question once he had asked it. "You shall have your sunset. I shall command it. But, according to my science of government, I shall wait until conditions are favorable." "When will that be?" inquired the little prince. "Hum, hum," replied the king, and before saying anything else, he consulted a bulky almanac. "Hum, hum, that will be about this evening, about 8:20, and you will see how well I am obeyed." The little prince yawned. He was regretting his last sunset. And then, too, he was already beginning to be a little bored. "I have nothing more to do here," he said to the king, "so I shall set out on my way again." "Do not go," said the king, who was very proud of having a subject. "Do not go. I will make you a minister." "A minister of what?" "A minister of justice." "But there is nobody here to judge." "We do not know that," the king said to him. "I have not made a complete tour of my kingdom. I am very old. There is no room here for a carriage, and it tires me to walk." "But I have looked already," said the little prince, turning around to give one more glance to the other side of the planet. On that side, as on this, there was nobody at all. "Then you shall judge yourself," the king answered. "That is the most difficult thing of all. It is much more difficult to judge oneself than to judge others. If you succeed in judging yourself rightly, then you are indeed a man of true wisdom." "Yes," said the little prince, "but I can judge myself anywhere. I do not need to live on this planet." "Hum, hum," said the king. "I have good reason to believe that somewhere on my planet there is an old rat. I hear him at night. You can judge this old rat. From time to time, you will condemn him to death. Thus his life will depend on your justice. But you will pardon him on each occasion, for he must be treated thriftily. He is the only one we have." "I," replied the little prince, "I do not like to condemn anyone to death. And now I think I will go on my way." "No," said the king. But the little prince, having now completed his preparations for departure, had no wish to grieve the old monarch. "If your majesty wishes to be promptly obeyed," he said, "he should be able to give me a reasonable order. He should be able, for example, to order me to be gone by the end of 1 minute. It seems to me the conditions are favorable." As the king made no answer, the little prince hesitated a moment. Then with a sigh, he took his leave. "I make you my ambassador," the king called out hastily. He had a magnificent air of authority. "Grown-ups are very strange," the little prince said to himself as he continued on his journey. Chapter 11. The second planet was inhabited by a conceited man. Ah, I am about to receive a visit from an admirer," he exclaimed from afar when he first saw the little prince coming. for, to conceited men, all other men are admirers. Good morning, said the little prince. That is a queer hat you are wearing. It is a hat for salutes, the conceited man replied. It is to raise and salute when people acclaim me. Unfortunately, nobody at all ever passes this way. Yes, said the little prince, who did not understand what the conceited man was talking about. Clap your hands, one against the other, the conceited man now directed him. The little prince clapped his hands. The conceited man raised his hat in a modest salute. This is more entertaining than the visit to the king, the little prince said to himself. And he began again to clap his hands, one against the other. The conceited man again raised his hat in salute. After 5 minutes of this exercise, the little prince grew tired of the game's monotony. And what should one do to make the hat come down? He asked. But the conceited man did not hear him. Conceited people never hear anything but praise. Do you really admire me very much? He demanded of the little prince. What does that mean, admire? To admire means that you regard me as the handsomest, the best dressed, the richest, and the most intelligent man on this planet. But you are the only man on your planet. Do me this kindness. Admire me just the same. I admire you, said the little prince, shrugging his shoulders slightly. But what is there in that to interest you so much? And the little prince went away. The grown-ups are certainly very odd, he said to himself as he continued on his journey. Chapter 12. The next planet was inhabited by a tippler. This was a very short visit, but it plunged the little prince into deep dejection. What are you doing there? He said to the tippler, who he found settled down in silence before a collection of empty bottles and also a collection of full bottles. I am drinking, replied the tippler, with a lugubrious air. Why are you drinking? Demanded the little prince. So that I may forget, replied the tippler. Forget what? Inquired the little prince, who already was sorry for him. Forget that I am ashamed, the tippler confessed, hanging his head. Ashamed of what? Insisted the little prince, who wanted to help him. Ashamed of drinking. The tippler brought his speech to an end and shut himself up in an impregnable silence. And the little prince went away, puzzled. Grown-ups are certainly very, very odd, he said to himself as he continued on his journey. Chapter 13. The fourth planet belonged to a businessman. This man was so much occupied that he did not even raise his head at the little prince's arrival. Good morning, the little prince said to him. Your cigarette has gone out. 3 and 2 make 5. 5 and 7 make 12. 12 and 3 make 15. Good morning. 15 and 7 make 22. 22 and 6 make 28. I haven't time to light it again. 26 and 5 make 31. Phew. And that makes 501,622,731. 500 million what? Asked the little prince. Eh? Are you still there? 501 million. I can't stop. I have so much to do. I'm concerned with matters of consequence. I don't amuse myself with balderdash. 2 and 5 make 7. 501 million what? Repeated the little prince, who never in his life had let go of a question once he had asked it. The businessman raised his head. During the 54 years that I have inhabited this planet, I have been disturbed only 3 times. The first time was 22 years ago, when some giddy goose fell from the goodness knows where. He made the most frightful noise that resounded all over the place, and I made 4 mistakes in my addition. The second time, 11 years ago, I was disturbed by an attack of rheumatism. I don't get enough exercise. I have no time for loafing. And the third time, well, this is it. I was saying that. 501 millions. Millions of what? The businessman suddenly realized that there was no hope of being left in peace until he answered this question. Millions of those tiny little objects, he said, which one sometimes sees in the sky. Flies? Oh no, little glittering objects. Bees? No, little golden objects that set lazy men to idle dreaming. As for me, I'm concerned with matters of consequence. There is no time for idle dreaming in my life. Oh, you mean the stars? Yes, that's it, the stars. And what do you do with 500 millions of stars? 501,622,731. I am concerned with matters of consequence. I am accurate. And what do you do with these stars? What do I do with them? Yes. Nothing. I own them. You own the stars? Yes. But I've already seen a king who... Kings do not own. They reign over. It is a very different matter. And what good does it do you to own the stars? Well, it does me the good of making me rich. And what good does it do you to be rich? It makes it possible for me to buy more stars if any are discovered. This man, the little prince said to himself, reasons a little like my poor tippler. Nevertheless, he still had some questions. How is it possible for one to own the stars? To whom do they belong? The businessman retorted peevishly. I don't know. To nobody. Then they belong to me because I was the first person to think of it. Is that all that is necessary? Certainly. When you find a diamond that belongs to nobody, it is yours. When you discover an island that belongs to nobody, it is yours. When you get an idea before anyone else, you take out a patent on it, it's yours. So with me, I own the stars because nobody else before me ever thought of owning them. Yes, that is true, said the little prince. And what do you do with them? I administer them, replied the businessman. I count them and recount them. It is difficult. But I am a man who is naturally interested in matters of consequence. The little prince was still not satisfied. If I owned a silk scarf, he said, I could put it around my neck and take it away with me. If I owned a flower, I could pluck that flower and take it away with me. But you cannot pluck the stars from heaven. No, but I can put them in the bank. Whatever does that mean? That means that I write the number of my stars on a little paper. Then I put this paper in a drawer and lock it with a key. And is that all? That is enough, said the businessman. It is entertaining, thought the little prince. It is rather poetic. But it is of no great consequence. On matters of consequence, the little prince had ideas which were very different from those of the grown-ups. I myself own a flower, he continued his conversation with the businessman, which I water every day. I own three volcanoes, which I clean out every week, for I also clean out the one that is extinct. One never knows. It is of some use to my volcanoes, and it is of some use to my flower that I own them. But you are of no use to the stars. The businessman opened his mouth, and he found nothing to say in answer, and the little prince went away. The grown-ups are certainly altogether extraordinary, he said simply, talking to himself as he continued on his journey.